Instructional Designers in Offices Drinking Coffee is brought to you by Domino, makers of Domino One, the all-in-one cloud-based e-learning authoring tool for teams. You can learn more at domino.com. That's DOMINKNOW.com. Now, here's this week's episode.
Here we go.
Right at me for a minute
there. It's almost three-dimensional.
Exactly.
3D, baby.
Caught me off guard.
Woo, good morning.
That got the heart a pumping, that's for sure. That scary mug coming right at me through the screen.
Were you talking about Brent or the...
Whichever one.
Hey, don't answer that, Chris.
No kidding. If I answered that, that only opens up me to similar comments later on. So we'll
stay. I'm staying neutral, okay? I'm just an intermediary here.
Nah, it's all fair game.
Very cool.
Fair game. Hey, we're getting weather reports. Check it out.
We are from around the world. Apparently it is sunny and rainy all at the same time in Ireland. We have at least two people who have confirmed that today already. So
that sounds very accurate. I can confirm in the northeast of England, very similar.
The east coast of Canada, there's a saying, if you don't like the weather, wait 15 minutes. Here in Eastern Ontario, we're in a stretch of absolutely beautiful weather, like 5-6 days in a row, touching up towards 30 Celsius as we get along, which is going to be like, I don't know, for those of you in America, that's like 454 Fahrenheit. I think your paper starts to burn at that point, doesn't it? I don't know.
Yeah,
I can never translate the Celsius to Fahrenheit very well. But anyway, gang, we have Ashley Sinclair with us here today. Ashley is going to join us to talk a bit about marketing, something we haven't talked about in a little bit, and how we can, you know, do things with the products that we make. Ashley, go ahead and introduce yourself to the folks. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yes. Yeah, so hi, my name's Ashley Sinclair, and I'm the managing director of Mass Marketing. So we are a specialist marketing agency that exclusively services the world of learning. So we've been running for around about 2.5 years. I've been a marketer in the learning technology space for about 10 years, cut my teeth as a marketing coordinator and clawed my way up the ladder all the way up to chief marketing officer. And in that time, really started to observe, in my opinion, a genuine and sincere need to introduce marketing into our learning function. You know, I saw time and time again where our learning products would go to market, i.e. we'd launch a new platform or we'd create new learning programs, and they would fall flat. And as a function, we weren't really getting the results that we wanted from those programs that we've put a lot of effort into, let's be honest. And so, that's what we do. We work very closely with clients, both on the vendor side and in-house corporate L&D, in terms of empowering and enabling them to better understand marketing strategies, tactics, and thinking, and start to introduce that into the L&D function.
Very cool. For a lot of us who say work for in the organizational training and development department, for instance, in a lot of cases, the marketing consists of putting the SCORM package in the LMS and then marking it mandatory because it's compliance training and everybody's got to take it, you know. And there are some things that we do that don't really need, you know, marketing because you have to take it every year or whatever, that kind of a thing. But there are still lots of places where even, you know, inside of an organization, if you're not, you know, promoting yourself externally or whatever, where you should probably be thinking about ways to make sure that people know what's out there for them to be able to improve, to get better, to find answers, all those kinds of things. It's just something we don't think of, though. We think about making the thing that people are going to take, whether that's an e-learning course or the classroom training session that we're setting up. So if some folks are looking for some quick places to sort of think about how they can start, you know, thinking in that broader kind of sense about, shouting out to the world, even if that world is within their own organization, about the things that they've got available. Where are some of the places where you would suggest people start thinking about doing some stuff?
So I think it's quite a broad question, because I think primarily my first question would be, what are you trying to achieve? Because it isn't just a case of, oh, well, we need to start raising awareness. You know, if there's a known engagement problem in our learning function, say we are having a real issue with getting people to our learning platform, undertaking our learning courses, completions, fine for compliance. Let's just put that in a little separate box, because like you said, it doesn't kind of fall into the same criteria here. So say if we were trying to increase engagement, then, you know, that really comes down to a learning culture. And, you know, what are the attitudes towards learners in the organization? I'd ask a question, do they even know it exists, right? So my argument all the time is, we don't have an engagement problem, we have an awareness problem. People actually don't even know a lot of the time that a learning platform exists, or that they have all this, you know, curated content and e-learning modules and resources that all sit within this magical space for them. So if we were to look at starting to understand or embracing some marketing strategies and thinking, the first thing we must do is think about our learners more as people. So one of the big things I always say is almost putting the term learner in the bin, because that term infers that these people are already proactively undertaking learning. They are learners, they are learning. Whereas in many cases, based on the kind of engagement stats that I see from our clients, that's low, you know, and so most of them aren't learning. Why is a separate question. So if we want to get them to start learning, we want to connect with them, the first thing that we need to do, and the first thing a marketer would do before they start doing any sort of strategy or campaign, would be to do a deep dive in terms of actually understanding their target audience, much more deeply understanding their wants, their needs. I see this all the time. L&D builds from a place of what the business wants, what the function wants. And that can cause us problems out the gates.
Well, Oh, I didn't mute that myself, so I am on. We talk about it all the time as instructional designers too, right? I mean, it's get in there, get into the roots, figure out what the people actually doing the work are, you know, what they're doing, and talk to them. Don't just be directed by management or by what the higher ups in the business want. Yes, that kind of starts the ball rolling, but if you really want to create the effective training, get in there to your end users and really find out what it is that they're up against and the work that they're doing, right? We get that information, or at least we should be getting that information to deal with the instructional design aspect of it, but then I think we forget that that information is valuable, and we can also use that to market to them that this new solution that we've created to help solve their problem exists and to get them there. I would say, you know, when we're talking about where do we start and the buckets you mentioned, I think there's so many also, right? Like, we could say marketing a course. Maybe you've been working really hard on your single course and there's a particular audience that needs it, and so you're marketing that. But then to your point, maybe you've just implemented a whole new system, a new LMS. And so there's marketing as far as the launch of that new element, that whole system. And then maybe there's a big initiative in the company that a whole new system for the business has been implemented, and training is a part of that. And so you're kind of embedded in that. At least those are some of the experiences I reflect on as I kind of go back through my past career and doing it. And each one is different, right? I don't know if you run into those same buckets or not, but they all require some sort of marketing or communication plan.
Definitely. And I mean, look, that's the same experience that we're seeing here. We were just working with a client who we'd done like a big campaign and had done all the assets and done this really cool tagline. It was really buzzy. We had loads of videos and content. And then internal communications came in and said, hey, by the way, we're doing this and you need to align to that. Because, you know, the hierarchically, we probably have to kowtow to internal comms or at least play nice with them, right? So that is a very common dynamic. And it's also very common from a marketing function perspective, where we would be looking at a kind of overarching brand strategy. You know, how do we communicate the kind of brand values, the ethos, the brand pillars, the things that make people kind of really identify and connect with us on an emotional level? And then that would be your kind of overarching, like, learning as a concept, your learning culture. But then, you know, you mentioned programs, launch of a platform, that sort of stuff. Those would be your campaigns, right? So, and that's exactly what a marketer does. We've got you know, an annual plan, which is kind of our strategy. That's here's our overarching themes, the red thread that might stitch through it all. And then underneath that, we've got specific campaigns that might be to support the launch of new products or increase engagement or, you know, increase sales of a specific product, whatever it might be. So we still have very similar agendas. When you really distill it down, the objectives are very, very similar. And so when you look at it like that, this is why I started Mass, because I was just like, to me, the parity is so obvious. We're really trying to get people to do things they don't want to do or be aware of things they don't know about yet. And, you know, when you really look at it like that, of course, marketing has to play a role in the learning function, because it's not enough for us to think it's important and for the business to think it's important. That doesn't mean anything to, you know, people who have jobs and children and dogs and hobbies and things that are way outside of the sphere of the organization. So really, it's up to us to raise awareness, persuade them to move their butts, and then work very closely from a communication perspective to start building habits. Because this is, again, learning theory, right? Spaced repetition. We know that a habit's not built from one thing. So why do we think sending an email once to an audience to say, hey, we got a new platform, we got a new program, everybody's going to use it, right? It's the same logic.
It used to be a marketing thing, right? Was it like somebody needs to see a message like 7 times or something like that? I know back in the day, this was...
Yeah, that's a theory. It still stands. I'm not sure. It's not validated so easily these days because we have so many touch points, right?
But, yeah, digital and everything kind of changed that whole thing. But back in the day of billboards and newspaper ads and magazine ads and all that, it was like you got to kind of flood people, and if they see it 7 times, that was sort of the magic number or something like that. But
that's when they might just remember, they might recognize your brand. That doesn't mean that they'll take an action, you know. Yeah. And I think that's the thing, like consistent presentation of a brand has an incredible effect on how people connect with it, but that still doesn't mean they take action.
Yeah. Are you engaging with instructional designers, or are you engaging mostly with training managers, or are you in larger companies? I mean, this is another really broad question, of course, but, you know, that's the part that I get really curious about. Like, where do you see at what point a team or an organization is hitting that wall that we talked about in the green room, right? Like, how do they, when they kind of can do some of this stuff on their own, or they're just not thinking about it, and then they hit that wall and realize I need some help, you know, is there a standard, or do you just get all sorts of different people going, we definitely need this?
It's typically larger organizations that we're working with at the moment, because they tend to have more sophisticated approaches to L&D. Sure. So I would make an argument that there's quite a large part of L&D that's either not ready to think about marketing because they're focusing on evolving their technology and evolving their approaches and, you know, just moving from classroom training to digital post-pandemic or, well, during the pandemic, et cetera. So there's, you know, as you guys will well know, L&D is on a huge spectrum when it comes to our capabilities, and a lot of that's dictated by budget most of the time. So a lot of our clients are typically bigger, and some of them even have some level of in-house marketer or people that are maybe focused more on communications, but they've upskilled themselves and they've hit a bit of a wall. So they kind of, it's like kind of like they know what they want to do, but they don't necessarily know what to do. So it's kind of, we want this, but we don't really know how to actually go about doing that, you know? And that's gone from, you know, learning campaigns through to developing learning brands, through to marketing strategy, enablement workshops, that sort of thing. So those are the kind of layers that tend to sit in there. But generally speaking, we get approached more commonly by bigger organizations, just because I think the need is there,
sure,
the budget's there, and they have the infrastructure internally, the budget and the resource, which means that they'll actually be able to implement and commit time towards a marketing strategy rather than kind of the more atypical things that you'd expect in an L&D function.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Christine is asking a question in the chat. We deal with needing to increase sales of a learning product that's been developed. So it sounds like selling money's changing hands here, I guess. So you're recommending a campaign that cycles to generate the energy to take that learning course / product.
So
let's just dwell a little bit more about what a campaign is. You have used that word, but people... Okay, it's a word, but what does it mean? What does it look like? What does it do?
I'm so glad you asked that question, because I think that there are many, many opinions about what a learning campaign is. Let me answer quickly what it's not. It's not single communications. So a campaign, in my opinion, is a strategic effort to consistently and persistently reach an audience over a period of time. That period of time varies. In my opinion, a campaign should never be less than 3 months, because we just can't get a lot done. As you said, even if it was just the 7 touch points, you know, if we're looking at email open rates of 25%, you know, you start doing the math, even if you were to send an email every week or something, not every single person is going to see it every single time. So we need to span it over a progressive period of time. Ideally, a campaign will be focused on key goals that are identified at the beginning, whether that be selling more product, getting more bums on seats, getting more logins to the LMS, improving performance and mapping our learning to behaviors, whatever it might be. And then building out all the way through from awareness. So getting people going on the proviso that nobody's ever heard of this thing, they don't know what it is, all the way down to kind of this decision-making or conversion stage where they would start taking action, changing their behavior, just towards the learning, of course. On top of that, a campaign, in my opinion, should also be multi-channel. And what I mean by that is that ideally we would be using more than one communication channel to reach our audiences. Channels are a big discussion in L&D because we don't have as many as an external marketer like me does, but we do have a lot more than we think. So on my Marketing for Learning podcast, I was chatting to a lady called Caroline Fitzpatrick from L'Oreal. They do a lot of communications, employee activation stuff all around kind of learning function. She counted that she has 16 marketing channels at her disposal. That's a lot. I don't have that many. Let's just put it that way. But ideally, we want to be touching people from a few different points. Again, operating on the proviso that not every single thing that we put out there is going to be seen. So a few things just to round that up is consistent presentation over a period of time, ideally using multiple channels or touch points, and focusing on a variety of different funnel stages. So from that awareness stage down to that kind of more decision and consideration stage. So understanding that how we communicate with people, if they don't know anything about a product versus someone who's very familiar with it, the language should be different. How we present ourselves should be different, because that level of personalization is really, really important. You know, it's hey, you've never heard of us, versus you're already one of the cool ones. You're involved. You know, that language change should happen, and that should be part of our campaign too.
I think it's understanding the internal IT. I can remember when digital first started becoming a thing in our industry, and I remember telling people, have you taken out your IT guy? You know, do any of you, I'd be at conferences and I'd be like, how many of you know your IT guy? And, you know, hardly anybody would raise their hands back then. I'm like, why not? We do digital. We do e-learning. We are part of the tech infrastructure in our companies. Why don't you know the IT department? You know, and I always joked, I wanted to start not a national, but an industry-wide concept of, you know, take your IT guy to lunch day or something like that, right? Just to get L&D people to realize you need to understand them, and you need to get them to partner with you as well so that you can understand the tech. But the reason why I'm bringing all this up is the channels, right? You need to understand all of the different tech that's out there that is available to you to get your messages out, whether it's the internal SharePoint server, the email, any social networking systems that are internal only, things like that. Mm-hmm. And then to understand the business and understanding how your implementation may impact other things that are going on too, right? I mean, we touched on this a little bit, but there's other things obviously going on in the business as well. We can also take advantage of those opportunities, but we also don't want to infringe upon them. So if there's a huge campaign going on from a different department, maybe it's smart to wait until that campaign's over before you launch your learning campaign or something like that, right? That sort of strategic level of thinking, I think, can also be a part of whether what you're doing is going to succeed or fail, or whether you have to do it again.
That relates to something that Geraldine in the chat there is mentioning. In my organization, the problem is oversaturation. There's so much communication from multiple groups over multiple channels that things get lost. And Stephanie just added in same issue here in our organization. Yeah. So that kind of points to the fact that you got to talk to other people so that, yeah, not everybody's trying to hammer points across at the same time and causing noise and things getting lost in the fray.
Yeah, and I mean, it's, again, such a common pain point that we have with our customers, because this is, you know, especially pandemic and post-pandemic, we've all gone remote working. So like email is probably one of the main channels that we have, and it is just insanely saturated, to Geraldine's point. So again, I would argue, look, here's my main point on the matter, and I wouldn't mind just touching back on the kind of partnering with other business functions, because I think that that is important. But on this point, do we think that our world isn't oversaturated with noise? How do good big brands cut through the noise? You know, cream always rises to the top. And I think that really this is why we need to do marketing, because at the moment we're just in amongst the wash with all of that. So this is, you know, why I talk to my customers, why we need to build a learning brand. And that doesn't mean you need a logo. That doesn't mean you need a color palette. But you need some hooks and associations with the learning brand so that your stuff stands out. And again, if you look at a campaign level, that is what that consistent presentation, those seven touch points, the things that are going to start connecting people with the products, with the brand, that's where you really start to move mountains. It isn't, you know, if we're just going to do ad hoc communications, that's the equivalent of throwing some stuff at the wall. Some of it will stick, but a lot of it won't. And so I think that that's, you know, it's kind of like, I understand it is very busy out there and very noisy internally and externally. And we are contending with the noise externally too. Let's be real with ourselves. Sure. You know, it isn't a case of just the emails and the comms that are going on in our internet and our Yammer and whatever. We're also contending with Instagram, TikTok, Netflix. There are competitors too when it comes to getting people's, our learners' attention. So I think, you know, further to that point, partnering with other business functions is vital. You know, that example I gave with the client where internal comms came in, they were actually very helpful. And, you know, they have typically more resource. They have designers in-house who are focused more on the marketing and comms perspective. They can become your BFFs. But what you don't want to do is start talking to them when there's a clear need. You want that relationship already established. And same with your techie guys too, you know, and the most successful L&D functions that I speak to when it comes to marketing definitely partner very closely with the business, because that also changes the dynamic. It changes the attitudes towards L&D that, you know, we're not a place where, hey, we need a new course or we need some training on this, which is very common still these days. It changes the dynamic because you're proactively going out there and saying, you know, what can we do for you? How can we support? This is who we are. You know, I mean, even like L'Oreal lady, they go and sit in different parts of the business, and like they're just present, they're visible, and people start to kind of associate the L&D team with somebody, with a group of people who are really concerned with the business.
Mm-hmm. It's an important part of it. Go ahead, Chris.
I was just going to say, so often L&D teams are looked at as order takers. Here's the PowerPoint. Can you turn this into e-learning? Here's the thing. We need a 3-day training. Well, do we? You know, those sorts of decisions are often taken out of our control or assumed that other people are just going to define, you know, the sets of needs, et cetera. So we've talked a lot in many, many episodes about that need to break out of that. You know, if you are stuck in that, how do you get out of that? And being able to prove, you know, let's call it a truer value, a bigger value than simply, you know, fitting, you know, products out that people think that they need, but being able to help identify other solutions, et cetera, with people. And that all comes down to working with other groups and communicating with other folks to raise your own profile and your team's profile. Yeah. Dana's got a question here.
Go ahead. I was just going to say, before you jump into the question, you know, what you mentioned, cutting through the noise, right? And, you know, what are some good ways to do that? And maybe, I don't know, I didn't get to Dana's question, but I don't want to transition too far away if Dana's question is a better segue to what we were just talking about, Chris.
Let's stick with your line of thought, because as I reread Dana's question, I think it's more of a rhetorical reply to what we were already talking about. I'm not seeing it as a specific question. So
yeah. So cutting through the noise, how do we do that? What has worked?
Good question. So I think that campaigns, in my opinion, are one of the best ways to do that. But there's a lot of components that sit under a campaign, which everybody who's attending this session today could put in their back pockets and start testing and trying out immediately. There's a couple of key things for me that I see us doing. maybe not badly, but with little care and attention. And one of those is copywriting. And so, especially if we've got a lot of instructional designers here, I see a lot on, you know, say on an LMS, for example, like, if you take this course, we will achieve these learning objectives and it will be the best. It doesn't matter. You know, this, we need to think about how we're going to persuade somebody to do that. Like, if you build out some marketing comms efforts and they get all the way there and then they read that, they might just jump straight back out and be like, nope, don't want to do that. So copywriting is something that is not, it doesn't come naturally to everybody. Writing isn't something, you know, that is just, it's just innate in all of us. Yes, we all can put pen to paper, but there are plenty of, I mean, just Google, you know, how to write the best blog or marketing copywriting techniques. And there's tons of fantastic books out there as well that can help with this. Storytelling, you know, Will Storr's Science of Storytelling is one of my favorite books. I'm sure it's somewhere. But it, yeah, you know, that is a great book. I love that book because it's, you know, how do we, again, how do we connect with our audiences on a more granular level? How do we focus on, you know, when I said earlier about better understanding our audiences, I mean, you know, really deeply understanding their emotional drivers. What's in it for me? Something I harp on about all the time. You know, it doesn't matter that the business wants them to take the module. It doesn't matter that you spent 25 hours building it. What matters to them is how it might improve their lives, how it might help them do their job better, how it might give them an hour back so they can sit and have a coffee with their wife or walk their dog, whatever it might be. But we need to think about how we position our learning to achieve our business goals in a way that resonates with our audience. So copywriting is probably one of the quickest and simplest ways that I think we could start really improving what we do. It's a big focus on how we write and thinking about our audience when we do write.
I think we could also look to look to other industries to get some inspiration too, right?
Yeah.
Like when a movie first gets announced, like a year out, you get like this little one visual and they tease it, right? And then they just flash up coming, you know, summer of, you know, 2025, and just enough to kind of get you excited and thinking about it. And then as time goes on, you start to get a little bit more information about it, a little bit longer, you know, trailer or something like that. I think we can absolutely do that. And you don't need a multi-million dollar budget to, you know, to produce those kinds of things. I don't think, but I mean, I see that as when we talk about campaigns, that's immediately where my head goes. It's like, you know, yep, other industries do this all the time. Let's just kind of, you know, obviously we don't have the budget, you know, we drop the budget, but the idea, the concept, the strategy and the approach that they take, we can do that just a little bit on a lower scale, right? Like,
yeah,
you said, with,
I
the
mean,
copywriting.
Begs the old borrow. I think, like, look, I'm here talking about how we can literally just take what marketing are doing, and they're learning heavily with their big budgets and testing, and they found the things that work. Let's just take some of it because there's a lot there. We don't need the big budgets because we don't want to do the billboards, and we don't, you know, well, it would be completely redundant to put a billboard. I mean, true story, a vendor I worked at a long time ago actually put a billboard outside the I-5 in LA, and I was like, for their product, and I was like, how many people who want to buy learning technologies are actually going to see that? Like, odd. But that's, you know, we don't need the billboards. We don't need to promote ourselves in that way. It's not personalized enough. It's irrelevant. It'd be a waste of our money. But that pre-launch thing is, I'm so glad you touched on that, because this is something that must happen more. So we want to be raising awareness of things way before the fact, because again, I see it a lot when we're launching something and it is like, oh, it's happening now, we need to tell people about it. But actually those teasers, those touch points, like the pre-campaign campaign, you know, that should be a part of a campaign. You know, when I launched a brand in my last role in-house, you know, I spent about 6 months building an audience and getting people really interested in this buzz before we launched the website, before the brand was even a thing, so that when it went to market, we weren't the veritable tree falling in the forest that nobody heard. There was already intrigue. You know, when Adele released her latest album, there was just posters that just said 30. People speculated, is that Adele? Because all her albums are, you know, titled after her age when she recorded it. That was it, 30, you know, the mystical 30. That was enough to generate a lot of buzz towards her album coming out, you know, so absolutely spot on.
Wouldn't that be cool if we could have that kind of power and authority inside of our companies, where, you know, put a poster up in the lobby as people walk into the building, or if people ever walk into buildings again, I don't know, that just says learning. or something
but
like
why,
that.
But why not? I think we need to dream bigger.
Of course.
And I think,
yeah, sure.
Yeah. You know, this, the thing, the problem I think, or the biggest challenge that we have is, you know, planning this stuff takes some time. Yeah. And it requires us to take a step back and really think, okay, what are we trying to achieve with this campaign? Or, you know, what's our primary objective when it comes to this learning? And how, you know, and then how best do we generate that intrigue? You know, that's where the real creative stuff comes in. You know, that's where the really amazing marketers are separate from the ones who are just okay, is those people who can come up with those ideas that are really going to connect with people on that emotional level. Because that's, if you think about most brands or examples that you've given, it's because there's an emotional affiliation to that brand or that product or that experience that you had. Emotions are the only way that we need to leverage them so much more when it comes to our comms and when creating our learning content too.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Chris, let's go back to Dana's question. I don't want to leave her.
Yeah, hand. For sure. It turns out Dana does have a real question. She's clarified it a bit. So Dana's asking, you know, who's designing these marketing materials? Who's the person who's going to post and share? I'm, you know, wondering if the design for marketing materials in this is outsourced or designed internally for larger companies that do market their stuff internally. Because it could be a challenge if you're L&D teams aren't exactly always big, you know, and you've already got a lot on your plate. How do you get this done? How do you find if maybe, you know, you're not actually prepared to be able or skilled up, you know, to be able to do, you know, some of these things because it's not in your zone. How do we get that piece of the equation done?
So, again, I think there are avenues, and I've seen every permutation possible where you have a graphic designer or, like I said, some sort of comms person that actually sits within the team. You know, I'm aware of quite a few L&D functions who have actual marketers that sit on their team or hiring marketers. Crazy. You know, the converse of that is there other resource outside of that specific business function, i.e. internal comms or your actual design function, depending on what your business does. The other side of that is, again, if they're completely outsourced to other projects, things like that, that does put you in a bit of a pickle. But I have a secret weapon, right? It's called Canva. And I don't know if you guys have heard of it, but it's my favorite tool.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
What I use to create 99% of all of our content for Mass, all of our marketing assets, and also all of our clients' assets as well. It's very low cost point. I think it's about £8 a month or something like that. Yeah. It's incredibly cheap.
And that's the pro level too.
That right. And so that gives you loads of templates. See, you know, Brent, you're on it. You love Canva. They should be giving me an affiliate link at this
stage. Right, they should. But hook her up.
It is the secret weapon for L&D because it is easy to use. It's intuitive. You can lock it down so you can put brand palette in there. You can put your fonts in there. You can completely lock it down so your team only has the stuff that's on brand. You can create folders with your stock imagery or your asset libraries if you know you need to play ball with your existing brand. It's a secret weapon. I'm seeing the Canva love in the chat. I'm so glad people are
familiar
with it.
Wow, it's exploding. And Buddy mentions too, if you're a nonprofit, you can get it for free. I had no idea about that. So there you go.
Yeah, I mean, and they're always adding new stuff as well. And, you know, we've got a course coming up for Mass, and a big part of that is actually showing people how to use Canva properly because it's a secret weapon because, you know, it changed my life. When I worked in-house as a marketer, prior to having something like Canva, it was either you must have Photoshop or InDesign skills or you need access to a graphic designer. So I was getting frustrated. I was wanting to put like a social media post up or something, like react to something quickly. I want a nice image to go with it. I'm waiting 8 days for my graphic designer to do something that takes them 25 minutes. So infuriating. So Canva just takes all of that out. So from a design perspective, if you haven't looked at that, that is my number one secret weapon go-to.
And it's nice. And the templates too, it's another great place for you to go and look and to see how professional marketing is done because they have a lot of templates that are pre-done, series of slides or a series of social media posts. And just by looking at the template, you can see, oh, that's how they do that, right? And that's what that would look like. So I just need to swap out their little generic content for my content, and I'm good to
go.
It's
a great place to start. And when the time value for you is so low, it means you can experiment too. And you can, okay, we'll try it this way. We'll try this color. We'll try this font. We'll try this type of message and see what works. Because, you know, until you start finding out how, you know, testing is a big part of marketing. And again, it's something we should definitely be doing more of. Experimentation embracing failures, asking why we failed, why didn't that, why is that post done better than that, why is that email got opened more than that. All that information, all those no's, tell you a lot more about your audience's wants, needs, and interests over the yeses, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Well, and that ties in a question that Kim has in the question panel. She's asking, what data or analytics are important to measure the success of marketing campaigns? And I like that you were actually just saying failures, because she's using the word success. let's talk a bit about that, because that is something you do want to, you know, you want to have an idea of how you're going to understand, measure, you know, after, you know, did it work or not? And, you know, what are the data points that you should be thinking about as you're planning a campaign?
Yeah. So first of all, do not be afraid of data and do not be afraid of benchmarking. This is something I encourage all my clients to do. Sometimes getting them to do it is difficult. Primarily there's a lack of good data around, which does make it hard. Like, look, if I'm using my MarTech, I've got, you know, nice email platforms that tell me my open rates. I can A/B test, which means I'm changing a single variable on my emails, whether it's subject line, the color of a button, maybe the body content, whatever it might be, to start to find out what's more effective at getting things open, getting a click through, whatever my objective is for that test. So the lack of good data is somewhat constrained to the technology that we have or don't have in our function. Nevertheless, to answer the question, there's a few key things that I would say. Number one, we need to understand what it is that you're trying to achieve, because when we're looking at marketing and campaign, we're primarily going to be focusing on engagement stats, like visits to the LMS, increases in learning hours, increases in learning content undertaken, you know, open rates of emails, likes on your, you know, your Yammer, your Slacks, your social posts, that sort of thing, engagement stats overall on those sort of social media channels. That data is great. And that can show you if your campaign is working, especially once you have a benchmark and you can say, well, look, our average open rate is 18% and we're getting that higher. That means that people are engaging with our content. But that doesn't mean that anybody is doing learning. And that doesn't mean that they've learned anything if they did the learning. And that doesn't mean that they're then applying that learning and subsequently changing their performance. So we want to obviously be very aware of what our marketing campaigns are doing and making sure that they are being effective. I just want to kind of make sure that we're not conflating that with overall learning outcomes, because those two things, in my opinion, are very, very different.
Yeah, well, that's why we're here, right? That's why our departments exist, is that learning side of it. And I think that's where that internal struggle is a lot of times within groups and at the training manager level. And when the training manager goes to request, you know, I need an open rec for a marketer. And they're like, what? You're the training department. Why do you need a communications and marketing person? You know, and that trying to sell that idea can sometimes be, you know, a little bit not so easy. You know, unless you're in a really large organization that has a massive L&D team of sorts, right? But along those lines, one of the things I was thinking about is, and I wanted to ask the chat this as well, you know, how many of you folks, first of all, if you work inside of a large corporation, how many of you spent some time to define your team and your name and market the team and the work that you do, maybe not necessarily down at the course level or the implementation level and doing that level of marketing, but just marketing your team and your organization. Like, do you give it a name? The reason why this comes up, in my first experience in corporate America was at Intel. And I remember getting into a team that was newly formed inside of a very large part of the organization. And we did spend some time deciding, what are we going to call ourselves? Right. And I remember having meetings saying, you know, we need to come up with a name and we need to come up, you know, does anybody know how to design a logo or, you know, anything like that? And we would brainstorm, you know, interesting names for our teams. And as I'm sitting here rambling, I am, because I'm trying to remember what we called ourselves. And now I can't quite remember.
So it was very memorable.
Well, it was also like 30 plus years ago and my brain is shot. So, you know, no long-term memory. But do people still do that? Or was that just a weird quirk that I was on a weird team?
I mean, from my experience, I don't see much around the learning function being called something. I see very commonly learning platforms being named things still, or that kind of tends to, the learning yeah. platform then somehow ends up like becoming the learning brand identity somehow.
Oh,
kind of
yeah. They'll rename it, right? Yeah, there's the system name that they plug into, but then they brand their learning collection of platforms or the portal as a particular interesting yeah. name. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But I think, you know, the point of the brand is an interesting one. And I did touch on it a bit earlier. And, it's not just these ideas of, you know, colors and logos and names and things. And these are all important, of course, whether a name's memorable or not, or, you know, can it stick in there? Is it an earworm? Is it going to bounce around in someone's head? Like, I get the word amuse-bouche in my head and it just doesn't go away. I don't know why. So sometimes, you know, finding unique words or things that are going to bounce around in someone's brain can be really great, but that's in and of itself, that's not enough. Like, you know, words like Coca-Cola, immediately that conjures up feelings and things, and you think of the product, you can probably, you know, some people's saliva glands will be going straight away. You know, that's the brand. It's not the loopy letters and the red. Like, the brand is the experience that people have. So it doesn't really matter what you call it. It doesn't matter what colors you use. It doesn't matter what typography you use. When you get down deeper, yes, if you want to support it, yes. But at a fundamental level, you need to make sure that the experience is commensurate with what you're trying to convey to your learners.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. I was just curious. It's good to see so much in the chat. Wow, we're getting a boatload of questions, but we're also getting a little bit closer to our time. So I want to make sure that we wrap up. Chris, did you have any final big points that you wanted to hit on that we missed?
Well, there were a lot of folks who chimed in about that, you know, branding of your mark, of your L&D group. And a lot of the comments, though, are pointed that, you know, a lot of these cases that are being brought up are folks who do have to market externally to something else. So clearly there's a brand because you are trying to sell something outside of your own organization. So there needs to be, you know, obviously a brand identity around that. Kim's noting, and we did it in my institution, we call ourselves the Learning Solutions Team. So being at least having a common reference point for your group that everybody can recognize and see it and value, as opposed to what's the, you know, something sort of amorphous or vague, at least that gives people, I think, within internally, at least some clarity of oh, there's that group that we can leverage or we could take advantage of, not take advantage of, but work with or whatever. You know, they have a role, they have an identity, and we know who they are. So, yeah.
Yeah, and further to the branding point as well, you know, most of our clients, very few, are actually able to develop a unique sub-brand that would mm-hmm. be a learning brand that has its own distinctive look and feel, separate tone of voice, all the things, logo, things that you would associate with the visual ident of a brand, because they are oftentimes, and this is a complaint of mine, but nevertheless, it's where we are, they end up having to use the overall corporate brand. And my argument is the target audience is very different to the company's external audience who they're trying to convert as customers versus the internal people audience. But that is often the situation. So then it's a conversation of, well, how do we differentiate ourselves from the noise? How do we rise above? How do we cut through that, you know, separate the wheat from the chaff, you know, from the, you know, mandatory emails that we get versus something that's really interesting and useful and relevant that comes from the learning team, whatever they're called.
Christine's got a great point to sort of summarize or reflect on. I was on a team that branded internally, and the greatest takeaway was the cohesiveness and energy it brought to the team to write our own internal vision and mission statements. Doing that kind of activity brings everybody together, focuses everybody up, puts everybody in the same direction. So when we created a training, it reflected our internal mission statement and vision. Did it reflect did it reflect the experience we said we wanted to create? It gave us all a really good direction. Pointed the ship all pointed everybody rowing together and getting that ship in the direction it needed to go. Very cool. Another aspect of this, of the piece of the equation that we haven't really thought about. So,
yeah. Further to that, something I would recommend everybody to take as, you know, if your learning functions or your teams have monthly get-togethers or whenever you guys as a group touch together, undertake something called a value proposition canvas. It is amazing. So it's I'm trying to think if I, whilst we're chatting, I'll see if I can find a link to one that I've done, because I've changed it a little bit for like the learning product and what we do. Yeah. But that basically asks you to look at your business function as a, you know, what are the benefits? What's the experience for people? What are the gains for them? All of that sort of stuff. And then who are they? What are their fears? What are their wants? What are their needs? And so then it kind of forces you to, at a bird's eye level, not only kind of start to understand and articulate who you are as a function, but what you offer to people. And does that meet what they need? And you can start to see some disparities or challenges straight away if you do that. So I'd strongly recommend digging out the value proposition canvas and having a go on that. I'll see if I can find it now.
I just found the businessy one, but if you've got a version that's directed at instructional designers,
I've made a slightly different one.
Modified it. Perfect. Yeah, get that in there. But while you're looking that up, I will get our music started and get us dancing out of here. But Ashley, thank you so much. I can't believe I waited 3 years to have you on Idiotic, but it's been fantastic to have you on board and being a guest.
My pleasure.
Today.
Yeah.
And if anybody does want to find me, I'm all over LinkedIn. I'll pop my profile in the chat.
Yep. Drop some things in the chat there, gang. Don't forget too that we do have the LinkedIn group you're welcome to join us to, you know, carry on the further understanding, discussion, the groovy vibes, etc. What happened there? For the
wrong button
stuff
push.
That we talk about in media. Oh, I think Brent forgot to rewind the cassette.
I got the pencil in there.
It's jammed. Yeah, I can see the tape flying all over.
Get a pencil, rewind it.
Yeah, perfect.
Okay, now it's going.
And don't forget as well, folks, that Idiotic is sponsored every week by Domino Learning Systems, makers of Domino One. And I'm dropping a link in there if you want to check out a little bit more about what we do outside of Idiotic. Check us out on that channel too.
All right, I found the value prop right at the last minute.
There we go. Slid it in under the wire. There was a reason Brent paused the music. That was all. It was all planned this way. It was a.
You got my back, buddy. I appreciate it.
It was strategic communication. highly functional team here going on. Gang,
thanks so much, everybody,
and we'll catch up with everybody again next week.
Yeah, absolutely. Cheers, everybody.
Ooh, we're doing the dance again.
Yes. Oh, of
dance
course, because
out.
The music is here. Let's turn it up. Well, we've got about a minute to do it, so if anybody gets that canvas done, let us know.
Yeah, share it on LinkedIn. Show me the magic. Or me.
We'll do a working session or something. Everybody.
Yeah.
Show us
honestly,
their examples.
It's such a worthwhile
everybody has a great week. Adios, everybody.